There are very few places in the world where you don't have to explain your grief, where no one expects you to smile or pretend. This is one of those rare places, a quiet, grounded day where you can simply show up exactly as you are. On Sunday, October 19th, we'll gather for the Grief Workshop at Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel in Killiney, Dublin, a peaceful place by the sea, created for anyone carrying grief. Throughout the day, you'll be gently supported by expert facilitators, people who understand grief and who offer real tools to help through movement, breath, journaling and stillness. You'll be guided back to yourself in quiet, compassionate ways. And you'll be in a room with others who get it. There's something powerful about sitting with people who don't need you to explain anything because they've felt it too. The setting is calm and beautiful, a soft place to land, to breathe, and to take time for yourself, time that's so rarely available in everyday life. By the end of the day, strangers may not feel like strangers, because when grief meets grief, something shifts. Some people leave with lifelong friends, others leave with something softer inside. And maybe just as importantly, you'll have spent time remembering your person, honouring them quietly, without distraction, without apology, because they deserve space too. Early bird tickets are now available at griefireland.com. Spaces are limited, and if it feels right for you, I'd love to welcome you. Quick shout out to our sponsor this week, Love Cherish, the gorgeous boutique in Cork run by Maeve and her brilliant team. They've been proudly supporting the podcast this season, and I'm so grateful to have them on board. They've got a stunning collection online at lovecherish.com. And whether you're after something for a special occasion like a wedding, communion or confirmation, or just a few everyday bits to make you feel good, Maeve's own label, Oh Molly, is also available there. Season 7 is out now, and it's genuinely some of the best quality clothing I've ever worn, hands down. So if you're in the mood for a little browse or a little treat, head over to lovecherish.com and don't forget to use the code FLOWERS10 at the checkout for a discount. Supporting them helps support the podcast too, and that means a lot. Okay, so we are back again this week, and today I'm with the gorgeous Kirsty Forage, all the way from Dublin.
Yeah.
We got the Dubs in the house again.
We do, yeah.
You're so welcome. Thank you for coming down.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. We were just chatting there. You stayed in Galway last night. I was just discussing how shit the shopping is in Galway.
Oh my God, it was so bad. So bad.
It's very bad.
I thought I was going to come up here and spend a bomb. I'd say I spent €2 on my shopping strip.
Literally, no, yeah. There is nothing. There's no shopping. So that's what we were discussing here. Very important topic. But look, however, unfortunately, you're here for not a happy reason at all. But I would love to talk to you and hear all about your wonderful other half, Glenn.
Yeah.
So you're from Dublin. When did you meet Glenn?
I met Glenn when I was 17.
Babies.
Literally babies. I'd love to tell you this big romantic story about how we met, but it just did not go like that.
That's modern day dating.
Literally,
like.
Yeah.
So where did you meet him?
I was in a shopping centre with my friend and we were getting an ice cream and he was over the other side of the shopping centre. And I remember just seeing him. I knew his name from around anyways. He would have been quite popular up around where I live. And I remember, I've never seen him in person at this stage. So I remember just looking over and be like, oh my God, to my friend. I was like, he is beautiful. I was like, he is gorgeous. And my friend was like, yeah, he is, isn't he? Now, I probably should have been turned off him because he was actually getting kicked out of the square by a security guard. But I was like, oh no, he's gorgeous. Like, he was tall, dark, handsome.
Tick, tick, tick.
Really tanned. Like, people used to say he was like something out of Geordie Shore. Did you ever watch Geordie Shore? Yeah, he had a big quiff. Like, he was beautiful. He was just gorgeous. And I remember being like, he's gorgeous. And
did you lock eyes?
Yeah, he definitely was looking at me as well. I was like to my friend, was I seeing things or was he looking at me as well? And she was like, no, he's definitely looking at you. I was like, all right. So I went home anyways and I had a Facebook ad then from Glenn and he added me on Facebook and I was like, yes. I was like, lovely. Now, I've never had a boyfriend at this time. I'm the most quiet person ever, never had a boyfriend. So yeah, he just added me on Facebook and never texted me. Nothing. So there was nothing.
Just the ad.
I was putting up statuses. I was putting up pictures, just aiming at him to try get him to do. I was like, do something, like it. I was like something, like, no, nothing. And that went on for a couple of weeks. And then I remember I was going to a festival and I put up another picture aiming at him to like it. And I was going to Oxygen. Did you ever hear of Oxygen?
Yeah,
I was going to that festival. It was my first festival. And I actually, like, I can still picture the picture in my mind. Every time it popped up in my memories, I used to always tag Glenn, this is where it all started. But he liked that picture, finally. I was delighted with myself going off to the festival. But still, no text, nothing. He just gave me a little like. It's like he said, like, I'm at her adding you, you can do the rest. You know what I mean?
You do the hard work.
Yeah, literally. So the next day, I was like, I'm going to text him. I was like, I don't even care. I was like, I don't care. So I text him. Do you want to know what I said?
What?
What's up?
What's up?
Literally just gave him a what's up and we got chatting and he was very keen. Yeah, very keen from the start. He was like literally within about a day of chatting with me, he was like, so when you come to see me? So when you coming out to me? And I was a bit like, oh, like I was so shy. Like me go out to a boy? Absolutely not. No way. So shy. And I was like, I just kept putting it off. And then for the next 2 weeks or so, he was just like, when are you coming out to me? I'm texting you ages. Come on. Like, what story? And he was like, oh, I'm just out with my friend. Do you want to come see me? And I was like, yeah, I have one of my friends here. You bring one of your friends. So we ended up meeting up that night.
And
Oh my God. Yeah. I got a bit of Dutch courage into me because I was drinking, because I had a few drinks. And I was like, right, I'll go out to him now because if I don't, I never will. And then I'll regret it because I fancied him so much. And yeah, we went out then and...
Yeah, butterflies.
Literally, yeah. I was mad about him from the get-go. Mad about him. And after that, we were kind of inseparable ever since.
Really?
Yeah.
What? You were 17. What age was he then? Was there much
He was 17 as well. He's 2 months younger than me, actually. A bit of a cougar over here.
Okay, right. Yeah. Toy boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, lovely.
But yeah.
And so were you in school or just finished?
I was still in school at this stage and he was finished. He was, because I done 4 year, he didn't do 4 year. Okay. So he finished a year ahead of me. Yeah, he came on my debs and all.
Oh.
So it was lovely, yeah.
So then he worked in the army. Did he go straight into that?
No, he didn't go straight into that. He was a bit, he done a bit of everything, to be honest. He was kind of a handyman for a while. Okay. He done electrician. I think he got up to like his third or, I think he was going into his 4th year.
Okay.
See, Glenn was really good at doing things, but then when it came to the exams and all, he wasn't great at that.
Yeah.
So he kind of wasn't into it at all.
Yeah.
And then he joined the army in 2017, I think it was, he joined the army. And I was like, he is not going to last a month in here because he's one of them, like, he doesn't like being told what to do or he doesn't like authority. Yeah, literally, he was a messer. That was it. So I was like, he's not going to last. I hoped he did now, but I was like, he's not going to last a month in here. But he loved it.
Really?
Honestly, the best thing he's ever done was go into there, yeah. He loved it from the get-go, yeah.
It's surprising, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something about the army can, you know...
Discipline you.
Yeah,
100%, yeah.
Maybe it's what people are looking for, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, like, exactly. I think he needed it, to be honest. Yeah. He needed a bit, taken down a peg or two.
And so he went into the Air Corps.
He's in the Air Corps, yeah.
Yeah, I was just saying my brother is in the army as well. He's heading off today to Lebanon and you were saying that Glenn was in Lebanon as well.
Yeah, Glenn done a trip. So he started the army in 2017 and in 2019 he went to Leb as well. He went to Lebanon and I cried the whole time he was over there.
Did you?
Literally, like we were just, you couldn't separate us. Like I'd say the most we've been away from each other was 3 or 4 days maybe. Before he went there and then he told me he was going there and I was like, right, I have to prepare myself for this now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he went and I cried the whole time. But yeah, he loved it over there.
Mm.
He loved it, yeah.
And so were you guys living together or no?
He moved in with me, I'd say, a month after I met him.
Really?
Literally, yeah. My mom and dad went away for a weekend, I remember. And I know. My mom and dad went away for a weekend and he moved in for that weekend and just never went home after that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So your family obviously were mad about him as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, we winded everyone up. He was a messer and he was such a wind up, but they all loved him secretly.
Tell me more about him. Like, so he was a messer. Just, was he happy out? Like?
Oh my God, you'd never see him without a smile.
Really?
Like, he was just one of them people when he walked into a room, he'd light the whole room up. If he was at a party, he'd be the life and soul of the party. Like, he was the biggest extrovert you'd ever meet. Me and him were like chalk and cheese. I don't know how we lasted so long.
Opposites attract.
Literally like chalk and cheese. I like my own home comforts. I have about 3 friends. I keep to myself. Him, on the other hand, he just loved, he was just such a people person. He had friends in his job. He had friends in the army. He had friends on his football team. He had friends he could go out with. Like, he was just such a people person.
Mm.
He was amazing. That's what I said. I'm not going to toot his horn too much. He was a wind up, an absolute wind up. And especially with me, he loved to wind me up. He did.
Knew all the buttons.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Mm. He just loved getting a reaction from people. Like, he just wind you up and wind you up and wind you up. And then when you finally like blow, he was like, haha, that's what I was waiting for, you know? he was gassed. No, he was.
And he loved soccer as well. That was a big part of his life.
He just loved anything. He was such an active person.
Yeah.
He loved soccer. He played it ever since he was young. He actually could have made it really far.
Mm.
Like, his dad would have brought him over to trials in England a couple of times.
Wow.
But as I said, he was just too much of a messer to ever take things 100% serious.
Mm.
So,
but
yeah,
he loved it.
He loved it. He never stopped playing it. He kind of had a team that he'd play for if he didn't want to take it serious. And then if he wanted to actually be really serious with things, he had another team that he played for. Most of the time he was with a team called Crumlin United.
Mm.
And they were very good. He made very good friends up there. And they're all so lovely up there. Like, he was just one of them that could
real
do anything.
Athletic.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So fit, so healthy.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you are living together and you're so head over heels in love.
Yeah.
And from that love arrived a little Manine.
Yeah, yeah. Cruz came in 2020.
Was that a surprise?
No, not really. When he was away, it kind of pushes you to have quite serious conversations. And at this stage, when he was in the Lebanon, we were together 6 years.
Wow.
And I remember, like, we'd ring each other every night. And I remember us just saying, my nephew was born like 3 or 4 days before Glenn went over. And I was obsessed with my nephew. Ever since he came, I was like, oh my God, I want one. And anytime Glenn would ring me, he'd be like, is Cody there? I want to see Cody. Like, he was obsessed with him as well. And we were like, let's have a baby when you're home.
Yeah.
And I was like, we're ready. Let's do it. Like, why not? Mm. You know? And I was 24 at this stage and he would have been 24 as well. So he came home and he was home in the November, I think. And I found out I was pregnant the start of February then.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But he is the Cruz. Then he came in. It was the pandemic when I was pregnant.
Yeah.
So it was quite good. No one was going on holidays. No one was going out. No one was doing anything. So I didn't feel like I was missing out on anything. I had a lovely pregnancy. No complications. I wasn't that sick or anything. So it was lovely.
Did you find out if you're having a boy or girl?
Yeah. Oh my God. The pressure I was under to have a boy was crazy. Like, I remember him saying, Kirstie, if this comes out as a girl, we've done a gender reveal. He was like, if this comes out pink, he was like, you're going to know straight away that I'm not going to be happy. And I was like, Glenn, you can't say things like that. But when it was a boy, oh my God, the relief. I wanted a boy as well. I did. Now, obviously, I was like, healthy baby, whatever. But secretly, deep down, I did want a boy because I just knew how much Glenn wanted a little boy as well.
Oh, yeah.
So over the moon when we found out that
over
he was a boy.
Moon, yeah,
absolutely.
And along he came then in 2020, was it?
Yeah, 2020. He came in October. So Glenn wasn't actually allowed into any of my scans or anything. So that was quite hard.
Yeah.
And
you missed out on a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, no, he did. He did. Now, we went for a few private ones just so we could actually come in and see some things. But the majority of scans I was in on my own. And I actually done the majority of my labour on my own as well.
Oh,
he
God.
Didn't come in until he wasn't allowed in. He was sitting out in the Coombe car park. God love
That's
him.
Really hard, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was horrible. Oh my God. That day actually gives me the shivers when I think back on it now. I remember going in for a checkup and they're like, your blood pressure is very high. We're going to induce you today. And I was like, what? I was like, oh my God.
Ready.
I was like, no. So anyways, I had my bags ready. Everyone brought my bags up to me. Glenn, I think I started going into labour around 8 o'clock at night, I think it was. And he wasn't allowed into me until about 3 a.m, I think. He was
so
sitting
hard.
Out in the car. Yeah, just sitting
so
out in the car.
So hard that, isn't it?
Like, it's very hard on him as well. Yeah, of course.
I remember that at the time thinking, like, It's 50% their child too. They should have a right to be there.
And if he's going to come in at the end, like he's going to be there anyway. So why not just let him in? Do you know?
Yeah.
A lot of things didn't make sense back then though.
No, sure look.
What they done. So.
And so Cruz was born. How did you guys take to that as parents then?
Oh my God. Like duck to water.
Really?
Yeah. It's crazy that you're just giving this baby and you're like, there you go. That's yours. Off you go.
I know.
But yeah, honestly, the most amazing thing that ever happened to us. Glenn was literally, as I said, duck to war. He took being a daddy so well. He was great. They were best friends.
Obsessed with him.
Obsessed with him. Yeah.
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 And so Glenn, all this time was, as we've said, so young, athletic. I know you and I were saying before we hit record here, you had it all. Like you were so happy.
I had it all, content. Yeah. As I said, people really take, and I can say I took it for granted as well. Like if you have a little family and if you are so happy, like you're the riches of them all. Like who cares about money? Who cares about anything else?
Yeah.
If you have your person and if you have your family, you have it all. Mm-hmm. Like I think back and I'm like, I had it all, you know?
And so then, you know, where did things take a turn? What happened?
Do you know what? Looking back on things, we probably should have noticed a couple of months before. But because he was so fit and healthy, we thought any pains or anything he was getting was from football or from sport or torn ligaments or something. But I remember we were on holidays before. We loved a holiday. We were literally on holiday probably every second month. And then when Cruz came, we continued that as well. We just loved being like just us three. We actually said from the start we think we'd only have one baby because we just love how we can just bring him everywhere with us and do everything with him. And it's just us three, you know.
Tight.
Mm. Yeah, literally. And we were on holidays. I remember Glenn had veneers, so he got them done in Turkey, and he had to go back and get them fixed because they were chipped or something and he couldn't stand it. So I was going on holidays with my sister around the time that he was going over there. And I just booked on with me and Cruz, just booked on to her holiday. And he got FOMO then and he was like, right, I'm going to come for 2.5 days and then I'll fly to Turkey. So we came with us, we went to Salou and we had the best time ever. Not knowing that would have been our last family holiday. Like, and the fact that he even came for them 2.5 days, I think back and I'm like, oh my God, thank God. I remember when he was leaving, he was like, oh, I don't want to leave. I actually don't want to go to Turkey now. But he had everything booked, flights, accommodation. He had it all booked and they were waiting on him. So we had a great time over there and he went home. And the next day he was flying out to Turkey. And I remember him ringing me. He was flying over with two of his friends. And he rang me and when he landed then, he was like, Kirsty, you never guess what happened to me. And I was like, what? And he was like, I got on the plane and I fainted. He was like, I was just walking down the aisle and I just fainted out of nowhere. And here's me in the back of my head. He had too much to drink in the airport or something. That's probably what happened. And he was like, yeah, it was weird. Like, and then there was a nurse on board that was looking after him. But nothing ever came of it. Then he went and he got his teeth fixed. He was fine. And he was feeling well in himself as well. But he had a pain in his back, kind of like in his back and kind of in his side. He just kept getting like a dagging pain there. And we were just putting it down to football. We were just putting it down to whatever he was doing. And then I remember he was on an army camp. That's kind of like he was representing the Irish Army in a match, I remember. And usually they'd take them off all their duties for the week, that week, and just train and train and train until the match. And I remember he just came home early one day and I was like, oh, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm not doing that camp anymore. I'm done. He was like, I couldn't even run. He was like, I'm done. And I was like, Glenn, I was like, you have a little pain. I was like, would you not just... Like he didn't even want to go and watch the match. He didn't want to even go and continue, like just sit on the sideline around. He was like, I'm done. I'm after pulling off the camp. And that wasn't like him at all. Like he'd never give up on anything. So I was a bit like, that's a bit weird. I was like, would you not go and watch the match? You're part of the team. You're after getting them this far. I'm nearly sure it was an important match as well that they were doing. I was like, you're after helping to get them this far. Would you not keep going? Like, and he was like, no. He was just so annoyed with himself. He's like, no, I'm done. So that's kind of where I was like, something weird's going on. And then I remember it was the 7th of December. And before I say that, I have to mention that Glenn was a baby. Glenn needed to be babied. Like he was, like he'd be hungover and he'd need someone to hold them in his arms. Like honestly, he was one of them, man flu hit him hard. So whenever he was sick, everyone was just like, ah, he's hungover, or like no one ever took it serious because he just always wanted to be babied, which is fair enough. I didn't mind babying him, to be fair. But I remember he woke up at 4 a.m. on the 7th of December and he was like, oh, Kirsty, I'm going to the hospital. He was like, I need to go to A&E and see what's the story with this is. And I was like, it was 4 a.m. So I was like, Glenn, I'm in work at 8. I was like, I'll drop you on the way. I was like, just wait a few hours and I'll go with you. Because we had crows in the bed with us as well. I couldn't just get up and go with him. And he's like, no, it's grand. I'll go in myself. And I was like, right, fair enough. I'll ring you in a while anyways. So he went.
And it was the pain in the back and the side.
Yeah.
So he was just saying it was getting so bad.
Yeah, and it woke him up out of his sleep that morning and all. And he was just like, no, I have to go. He was like, I need to go get this sorted.
Okay.
And he went in and they actually kept him in for a week. They were throwing a few things at us. They were like, maybe it's pneumonia, maybe it's a clot in your lung. They said a few things, but nothing. They didn't say anything crazy like, and they ended up letting him out. And they said, we'll continue to do tests with you, but you can go home. Like you seem fine, they were saying. So he came home and again, just continued a normal life. He'd drive, he'd go on a night out, he'd continue to go to work, he went back to work, not a bother. And then there was another appointment about 2 weeks later, I think it was just about like 2 or 3 days before Christmas. And my mom actually went into the appointment with him. And they said, listen, we still don't know what it is, we're still working on things. I think they took a biopsy on him that day, I'm nearly sure. They were like, we're still working on things, we're still trying to figure out what it is, but you enjoy your Christmas. They were like, it's nothing sinister, they said to us. And we were like, right, fair enough. So that Christmas, my family actually had a Airbnb booked down in Wexford that we went to. It had like a big, huge house. And then we had like my sister, her family, my brother, his family. Like it was all the extended family and all that was there. We had a big house booked that had like a little shed on the side of it. I had pool, I had a bar, it was a great little house that we had booked. And I remember Glenn just sleeping the whole time we were down there. He just kept sleeping all the time, and that wasn't like him. Like me, I could fall asleep on this table anywhere, anytime I could fall asleep, but once he was up, he was up. He'd never nap in between days or anything like. He just slept the whole time down there. Now we did have a lovely time, but even for his Christmas dinner, Glenn would eat 2 Christmas dinners. He'd always have my mum's one, and then we'd always go over to his mum's house and he'd have her dinner as well. Then he'd probably come back to my mum's and have towards. Like he'd always eat his Christmas dinner, and that year he didn't eat his Christmas dinner as well. And I was a bit like, oh, like what's going on here? But yeah, we had a lovely time. He drove the whole way down. He drove the whole way back, not a bother to him. and then we got called into the hospital again 2 days before New Year's, I think it was. And we weren't meant to see anyone until after the New Year. But he got a kind of like an emergency call to go in. And we went in and it was like the top lung specialist that had us in. And he said to us, I was actually meant to be off for the Christmas. He was like, but I seen Glenn's scan and I needed to come in and I needed to call you in. They were like, it's definitely cancer. He was like, and this was the first time we heard cancer. So we were a bit like, what? We were like, how can you get told from like 2 days before Christmas? We got told it's nothing sinister. Go and enjoy your Christmas. And then a week later, cancer getting thrown at you. And he was saying it was lymphoma cancer. And he did say to us that day, he was like, listen, nobody wants to get cancer. He was like, no one wants to get cancer. But if you do get cancer, lymphoma is, lymphoma is so treatable. It's not a good cancer to get, but it's the most treatable cancer, so don't be worrying. And we were like, okay, great, whatever. Glenn was honestly fine. Okay. He honestly just took it in his stride. He was like, yeah, whatever. Well, what do you have to do? What do you want me to do? I'll do it. Blah, blah, blah.
And how were you?
My God, I broke. And like, it was nearly him being like, Kirsty, I'll be fine. Like, what are you crying over? Like,
I know, yeah.
But once I heard that word, I was like, oh my God. I was like, what? Glenn? How? Like, he's literally the most fittest person I've ever met in my whole life. He didn't smoke, drink occasionally, not much at all.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, how is it Glenn? I was like, he's only 26. He was 26 at this stage. But anyways, he just got on with his life. Honestly, not a bother to him. He was ringing his friends. Like, this was just the person he was. He'd ring his friends. He'd be like, I have bleeding cancer. Where would you get it? Like laughing down the phone to his friends saying, I have cancer. Fuck's sake. Like, and...
making light of it, like.
Literally making such light of it. Didn't cry once. He had one or two times where he was like, this is a bit serious, isn't it? And I was like, yeah, kind of, Glenn. But he was fine. Not a bother on him. And then January then came, and that was just, I'd say we were in the hospital every three or four days saying, what are we going to do? He was in getting biopsies left, right and centre. He was getting bone marrows. I think that's like a more in-depth biopsy kind of thing because they just could not figure out what this was. Now, they told us lymphoma and they referred him to a lymphoma place in Tala Hospital and all, and... But they still weren't, they were like, we don't know what type of lymphoma it is. So yeah, obviously biopsies left, right and centre then in January. And then they came back and said that they don't actually think it's lymphoma. They were like, we don't know what it is. Like they just could not figure out what this was that Glenn had. They knew it was cancerous and they knew it was growing at a rapid pace. Like it was active. They were like, this is so active that we need to sort it out soon, like very soon. And then I remember they called us in one of the days and they said, we still don't know what it is, but this is growing so fast that we're going to need to remove your lung. So so straight in, and they were saying, right, you're in next Tuesday now to, we're going to remove your lung, the whole thing, just to get rid of it. They still don't know what it is. They don't know what, if he wants, they want them to do chemo. They don't know what chemo to do because they don't know what cancer it is.
Jeez, that's...
Yeah, it was crazy, weird. Isn't it? Like, obviously it would feel a bit better if we had some answers of what it was or where it came from, but they had no clue. So they were in the dark and we were in the dark. Like, we didn't know what was going on. So they said, yeah, come in on Tuesday and we'll take your lung out. And that's a huge operation. Like, that's a huge organ to be just taken out of your body. And he was like, am I still going to be able to play football when they take this out? Like, they were like, what's my life going to look like after this? But his one lung would probably be healthier than a lot of people's two lungs, to be honest. So that's just, I was just trying to keep him positive. And then I remember we booked a night away. The night before he was going into the hospital, we said we may as well get one more night of normality in before you have to start. So I remember actually ringing them up to book. We were booking last minute. We were going down to the Seafield Hotel down in Wexford. That was one of our favourite hotels ever. At a gorgeous spa. And I was ringing them to see if they had availability. And this is just Glenn. He was like, Kirsty, tell them I have cancer. They'll upgrade us. I was like, Glenn, I am not saying that. I was like, no. And he was like, Kirsty, just tell them. And he was sitting in front of me when I was on the phone. And I was like, have you seen any rooms available? They're like, yeah, here we go. Blah, blah, blah. And they're like, is there any special occasion or anything? And he was in front of me like, tell them I have cancer. I was like, Glenn, I will go to hell. I was like, I'm not saying that. And he was like, tell them. And I was like, well, my partner's starting treatment next week. So we're just having a little night away before he starts treatment. And he was like, lovely. he just had his humour all the way. Like, and we got there anyways. And I'd say they were looking at us saying, these are lying. Like, you, like, looking at Glenn, you would not have thought he was sick in the slightest. Like, not a bother on him. So I'd say they were looking at us saying, they're after telling us he has cancer. Not a chance.
Yeah.
Like, we got there anyways. They didn't say anything. And they were like, yeah, room, blah, blah, blah. Got up to the room. Oh my God. We've been there before. And the rooms are modern, quite small. But they gave us the biggest room you could ever see.
Class.
His and her sink, four-poster bed.
Wow.
The balcony was probably bigger than my front and back garden put together. Like, we had the best time ever. We went for food.
Class. He was right.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. He was like, no.
Drop it in.
He was like, don't say I don't do what I'm free and all. And I was like, oh my God, we are going to hell. I can't believe you made me say that. But we had such a good night anyways. A great night, like. And I remember he was nervous. He was really nervous for his operation the next day. Yeah. Like, the doctor said he could continue doing whatever, like he could have a drink if he wanted or whatever. And I remember saying, do you want to get a drink before you go in now tomorrow? And he's like, no. He wouldn't. He was very nervous. And like that night we just kind of spoke about what was going to happen and how he was going to be. And he was positive, but he was nervous, as you would be, you know?
Yeah.
So the next day then we came home and we got him ready. We had his bags and all packed, so we got him ready and we brought him into the hospital. And he was so nervous. I remember me and Creole's bringing him in, and they don't usually let kids into the hospital, but they let us walk him right up to where he was going, me, him and Creole's. And I remember him just waving us off. Oh my God, it was the hardest thing ever. They wouldn't let me in with him, obviously. So he was just going in on his own. Oh my God, I was so scared. I didn't want to let him know, obviously. I just got back into the car and I just roared my eyes out crying. I could not stop crying. Like, how is he going in for such a big operation? Like, and I can't be there with him. But he ended up ringing me that night and he was like, Kirsty, everyone's gone home. He's like, come on back up to me. And I ended up going up to him and they let us sit in a family room. I think I was up there till like 1 or 2 in the morning with him. And everyone was ringing him. His mom was ringing him. My mom was ringing him. Everyone was ringing him saying good luck. And again, he was fine. He was scared now, but he was fine. Like, but he just did not want me to leave. He did not want me to leave him at all. And they came in, I think about 1 or 2, and they're like, right, you have to go now. He's up early in the morning or whatever. And yeah, that was it. I went home and the next day I got a text off him. He's like, oh, that's it, Kirsty, they're after taking me belongings. I still have to text off him. Oh. They goes, Kirsty, they're after taking me belongings. I'll be home. He goes to me in the text. I was like, obviously you'll be home. I was like, don't be so silly. And yeah, that day was horrible. We were all up the walls. We were all ringing around to each other up the walls. Has anyone heard from a doctor yet? Is he out yet? Is what's happening? And I think he went in at like 12 and they rang me. They didn't ring me until 6 o'clock that night.
Jeez.
Yeah.
A long time, isn't it?
Yeah. And on the phone, they were like, it was a great success. We're after getting everything. We got everything out. He's fine. He's in ICU now, just recovering. And I was like, can I come up and see him? And they were like, yeah, come on up and see him. And normally they don't ever let people into ICU whatsoever. So I was a bit like, what about that? But I told him that I'll be there. I was like, I'll be there after your operation. So like, even if they said no, I would have found a way to get in there myself. But yeah, so I went up to him and I went into ICU to him. Now, they did only let me in. I was probably in there for about 3 or 4 minutes, that's all. But once I seen him, I was happy. Like, and I remember he was asleep and I went in and I woke up and he turned to me and he's like, how'd I do, Kirst? I was like, you done amazing. I was like, well done. I was like, they're getting everything. I was like, they're so positive about it. I was like, so you just take care of yourself now. And he was like, good, good. He was in great spirits. And then I had to go home again after that. And he was in hospital then recovering for, I think they let him out after about 6 days, I think. And I did think to myself, that's a bit early for such a huge surgery that he's after getting. And I would have rather them be in hospital. Like, if anything was ever to go wrong, there's someone right there. I don't like the thought of something happening at home and everyone seeing and like crews being there and something gone wrong. But he came home and he was great, not bothering him again. He was just so positive with everything. Like, he was up walking. He tried to drive now and I was like, give me those keys now. I was like, you're not driving your car. And then we were at home for a week after that then. And he was getting really bad pains again where his scar was. So I just kept saying, you're going to have to go back in. You're going to have to go back in. He's like, oh no, I don't want to go back in. They're going to keep me in. I don't want to. And I was like, Glenn, you're going to have to. So he ended up going back in and they done loads of tests on him again and didn't know what it was for. His scar became infected. So they were putting, he had really bad stomach pains. That's what he went back in with. And they were putting the stomach pains down to the infection in his scar, thinking that was after going into his stomach and all that.
It was only like a week post.
Yeah, week post op. Yeah, he was at home for a week. Yeah. So they were saying that's what they thought it was. And anyway, a week went by. And I remember I was going back to work in between all these. I was working from home at this time. And he said, can you and your mom come in? He was like, the doctor wants to speak about what we're going to do going forward, Glenn said. And he sounded grand on the phone, like he was fine. And I was like, yeah, fair enough, no problem, we'll come in. I thought they were just going to say what the plan is going to look like. And they always did mention that he might need chemo, preventative chemo, like not chemo to get any more cancer, preventative chemo to just make sure there's nothing left there after his thing. So I was like, maybe they're going to tell us if he's going to need the chemo or not. So I was grand. I remember I rang my manager and I was like, I have to go in for a meeting with Glenn. I'll be back in an hour. And he was like, yeah, no problem. So then me and my mom went in. And I remember my mom saying to me in the car, she was like, are you nervous? And I was like, no. I was like, why would I be nervous? And she's like, I don't know. I just feel a bit nervous. And I was like, don't be so negative. I was like, they're literally just telling us what's going to happen going forward and how his other operation went. And she was like, right. And then we went in and Glenn was like, are you serious? Are you serious? I was like, yeah, we're just waiting on the doctor to come into us. He obviously thought that that's what the meeting was going to be about as well, just seeing what's happening going forward. And I remember the doctor came into me and my mom in the family room and he just had this look on his face. And as soon as I seen the look on his face, I was a bit like, right, he doesn't seem very happy about what's going on. And then they brought us in. He was in ICU at this stage again because I can't remember. I think he had another little procedure done. So he was in ICU. So they brought me and my mum into ICU, which again was weird. They don't let anybody in there, like, unless you're a doctor. So they put us in the full gear and brought us in. And there was another nurse there as well. And they sat us beside Glenn's bed. And I just remember the nurse, like, putting her hands on Glenn's feet and kind of, like, stroking them. Like, and I was like, oh God. I was like, they're about to tell us something bad here. And he just sat down. He was like, yeah, so this is what's out there happening. This is what's going on. Glenn's out there having a huge operation. We got what we needed. He's out there having a scan. And he was like, now the scan did show that his other lung has a few little shadows on it. And his bowel has a few shadows on it as well, which weren't there 2 weeks ago. They were like, so we are, so the cancer is that they're spreading, they said to us. They said they still don't know what cancer it is at this stage. They were like, but it is that they're spreading. They were like, and if we don't get moving soon, it's not going to look good. They were like, we need to get moving as soon as possible. And I remember Glenn just like, I've never seen Glenn cry in the whole 9 years that we were together. I've never seen him cry. I just remember him, crying. And I just remember him turning around to the doctor and he's like, can I die from this? Like, am I going to die? And the doctor couldn't answer us. He was like, I don't know. He was like, this is very serious. He was like, we took your lung out and we thought that was it. But the scan has shown not just one, and they were like, it's not just one spot. He was like, there's 5 spots on your lung and then there's a couple of spots on your bowel as well. So he was like, whatever this is, it's spreading so fast.
Jesus.
Yeah. That day, oh my God. Like, there's a lot of days now that I just think back on and think, oh my God, like, how did that even happen? I actually do feel like I'm speaking about someone else's life when I'm speaking about this. Like, it's crazy that this actually happened and that it happened to my Glenn. Like, it's madness. That day was just awful. As I said, I've never seen him cry before and he just cried the whole day. They let us bring crews in to see him that day. And again, which is weird, they don't let kids onto that ward that he was on. And I remember every time he just kept looking at crews and every time he looked at crews, he just burst out crying. And I remember Cruz was trying to play with him and he was trying to throw him up in the air. I think he'd done it like 3 times. And Cruz would be hyper as well. He'd be hyper like him. And he was like, again, daddy, again. And he went to do it, but he wasn't strong enough. He couldn't do it. And that just knocked him as well. It was awful.
What age was Cruz at this stage?
Cruz was 2.5. Yeah. Christ. Yeah. And they were literally the best of friends, honestly.
What age was Glenn?
Glenn was 26.
When this was happening?
When this was all going on, yeah.
That's mind blowing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'd say for you even, like, you'd be like, what is happening?
Yeah.
I was a 2-year-old. He's 26. Where did this guy going?
Yeah.
Like, were you terrified?
I was terrified, but never, like, not once was I ever told, what did it ever come into my head, he's going to die.
Mm.
Like, not once. Like, even when they say it was stage 4 cancer. No, not my Glenn. No, like, never. And I don't even think it was me being in denial. I just never, ever, ever thought he was going to die, like, ever. So, I don't know. And then he kind of perked up then at the end of the day. And he had visitors. Oh my God, it was like a revolving door. You'd swear there was a celebrity in there. He had about 20 visitors a day. Like, there was nearly people queuing up to visit him. It was that much, like...
Word spreads and they all arrive.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Exactly. And then I remember him bringing his friends. And again, in Glenn style, that they're spreading. Where would you get it? Like, laughing down the phone again with his friends. That they're spreading. He was like, I'll be grand. I'll be grand. So then again, the next few days, we kind of got his room sorted and all. He got given like a room on his own because of obviously how serious it was. And I remember that day he was like to me, Kirsty, you're not going anywhere. So I basically moved into the hospital room that day as well. So at this stage, again, still don't know what cancer it is. Still don't know. So they came in and they told us that they're after sending his lung, part of his lung, off to like 3 or 4 hospitals. One in London even had his lung, and they were all working on it to find out what this was. And again, nothing. They don't know what cancer is, so they didn't know what chemotherapy to give him. But they did know that he really needed this chemotherapy. So
they didn't start it?
They didn't start it yet, no.
Because they couldn't figure it out.
There was so much wasted time because we didn't know what this was. So they ended up just having to go in blind. They just said, we're going to give you the chemo that attacks most types of cancers. They were like, but we don't know if this is going to work. So again, they said, if this doesn't work, they were basically saying, there's nothing more we can do for you if this doesn't work because we cannot figure out what cancer you have. So we had to start that chemotherapy. And again, we didn't know if this was even going to work or not. So his chemo was a 3-day cycle. He got chemo for 3 days and then they'd leave it for 3 weeks. And he was so good for the chemo. He just got a burst of energy after them on. He's like, right, let's go on a walk. He was like, I could go on a run here. Like, honestly, he just took it all in a stride, not a problem to him. His brother had him on this mad strict diet of all the juices, all the fresh juices, and Glenn hated it. God love him. Well, I remember, like, and then he'd be like, say if my mum or my sister was coming in, he'd be like, can you bring me in a McFlurry? And we'd be like, oh my God, Jason is going to kill us. And then we'd be in there and he'd be eating his McFlurry and you'd get a FaceTime from Jason. And he'd be like, quick, take that. Don't let him know I'm eating this. Like when we were in the hospital, we had funny times, we had great times. Cheltenham was on. I left every time Cheltenham came on now because he used to always, like, if I said anything about a horse, he'd be like, that's your fault, that's that they're losing on me now. So I was like, I'm leaving before I even get the brunt of all this. So his family used to come into him for all the racing and all that. And I'd go home and spend time with Cruz for a couple of hours. Because it got tough, like, I still had a 2-year-old child at home, like.
Yeah.
I remember being at home one of the times and Cruz fell and hurt himself as well. Now, I was spending every single night in the hospital and I'd probably come home for like an hour or two a day. I'd be collecting Cruz from school and then I'd be going back in just so I'd see Cruz as well, like. And I remember Cruz fell and really hurt himself and I went over and picked him up and he was like, no, nanny. And my heart broke. I was like, is he like, because he used to always come to me for comfort.
Yeah.
But obviously, because the last few weeks I've been absent because I've been in with Glenn, he was calling out for my mum. So that broke my heart a little bit. And I remember going into Glenn, I was like, Glenn, every couple of nights I'm going to have to spend at least one night at home. Like, I need to, I can't, like, it was taking a toll on me as well. Like, God love him. I couldn't imagine being in there for all them hours. But I just kept thinking of Cruz at home as well and him wondering where we are, you know?
Yeah.
So it was hard. It was really hard.
So obviously they put him on the chemo then.
Yeah.
And he was cycling with that. Was he in the hospital while that was going on?
Yeah. So this was quite a long stint in hospital. He'd done 7 weeks in total. Jeez. In hospital at that stage. And he got, in them 7 weeks, he got two chemos done. And he flew through the chemos. And then I remembered him coming in and saying that the spots seemed to be reacting. Now, I'm sorry, I'm not using the right terminology or anything
reducing
here.
Like-
yeah. He was like, they seem to be reacting well to the chemo. They're okay. Like, so, so I remembered them coming in and they're like, they said, right, yeah, so everything's reacting well. We're going to let you go home. So that was after a 7 week stint in the hospital. They said that you can go home finally. And I remember a couple of weeks before he wrote on his board, he wanted to be home for Easter. And say Easter was the 9th of April or something, the 8th or the 9th of April. He wrote that he wanted to be get out of hospital by the 9th of April. And he, I think it ended up being the 5th of April they let us out or something. And I was like, now look at you reaching your goals on your board. And he was delighted. Oh my God, he was so happy. And I remember all he kept saying was, I just want to go down to Wexford. We love to Wexford. My sister has a mobile down there. And that's basically where Cruise was brought up in the summer, is like just down in Wexford, down in Corktown, down at the carnivals, down at Cahor Beach. Like we just loved it. And I remember he just kept saying, I want to go. My sister was going to Wexford for Easter. And he was like, I just want to go down with everyone to Wexford. He was like, that's all I want to do is go to Wexford. And we were like, right, just work towards that then. That's what we can do. If you are out by then, we'll go down to Wexford. And he got out a few days before. And when he got out, like again, he was out meeting friends, driving around in his car. I actually had an argument with him. I was like, you cannot be driving your car. But he was too independent. I was like, I'll drive you anywhere you want to go. I'll drive you. I was like, get your friends to drive you. And he was like, no, he wanted to drive. He wanted to.
Normality, probably.
That's exactly what he wanted. Yeah, he wanted normality, but we were all just worried about him, you know.
Yeah.
So again, that week he was doing all normal things, not a bother on him. And then it came to the Friday night actually. Me and his two brothers, his sister, and his brother's girlfriend Danielle. Then we all went bowling, and we had such a good night. Honestly, you wouldn't have known Glenn was sick. Again, you wouldn't have thought he had chemotherapy a few days before that. He won us all in bowling. Of course, he wins everything. And we just had such a great night. And again, back to normality it was. And I remember after that, then he was like, Kirsty, I don't want to go home. And I was like, right, where do you want to go? We won't go home then. Where do you want to go? And he wanted to go get an ice cream. So we went out and got an ice cream, and we just sat out on a wall eating the ice cream. And he was just like, oh, he just really appreciated it. You know what I mean? He was like this, like the crisp air. He hadn't got proper air in so long that we were just out eating an ice cream. And he actually just turned around and he said, this is what life's about. And I was like, yeah, it's the little things. It really is the little things. And then the Saturday then, we were going down to Wexford. We're finally getting to go down to Wexford. And before Glenn went into the hospital, he bought a new car. And it was like, it's called a Golf R. Now it's like a, I think it's like a fast Golf, basically. Now I wouldn't really know. It's a car I'm driving now. Mm. Yeah. But I think it's just like a boy racer car or something like that. So he was like, I want to drive to Wexford. And I was like, no, I'll drive down. And I was like, because if you drive down, then you'll have to drive the whole time down there, because his car was automatic. And this might sound stupid, but I never drove an automatic before, so I don't know how to drive an automatic.
Took me a while as well.
Yeah. And he was like, no. He was like, I want to drive. He was like, I haven't given me car a spin. I want to drive down. And I was like, right, okay. I just wanted to try give him as much normality as well.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, fair enough. You can drive. And we're driving down then. We actually had to make a few pit stops. So we always get the kids matching pajamas for Easter. So we had to stop off at the square. That's the shopping centre just up by our way. We just stopped off there. And I ran in and got pajamas, came back out. I remember him being like, will I stop for petrol? Will I not stop for petrol? And I was like, no, don't stop. I was like, you'll make it down. We'll get petrol on the way back. And then we drove down. We loved them drives down to Wexford because Cruise was would always fall asleep. We always done it around his nap time that he'd always fall asleep in the back of the car, and we just have all our favourite songs playing in the car and just singing along to them. Like, I have a video from when we were driving down that day of us two just singing a song in the car, and we just loved it. Like, it's only an hour drive down the road, but we loved it. And we were nearly then at the mobile park, and he was like, will we stop in the shop and get a few things? Because we used to always get cakes and stuff in the shop and bring them down to my sister's. And I was like, no, just go down. We'll go down to everyone first. And we got there then, and he got out of the car, and he was like, oh, Kirsty, I feel weird. And I was like, yeah, all right. And I was like, just go in and sit down then. Now, this was literally 30 seconds after he got out of the car. He went in and he sat down. Sorry, I'm just taking a drink.
Yeah, work away.
Yeah, he went in and he sat down on the sofa in the mobile, and my sister was out getting the shop for the weekend. So there was all my nieces and nephews, and my brother-in-law was there as well. And he just turned to me and he's like, Kirsty, I feel weird. And I was like, it's probably all the driving you're at today. And I was like, just sit down for a minute and relax. And he sat down and he just looked weird, and he started twitching like his finger started twitching. And then his eyes start rolling to the back of his head. And I was like, Glenn, what are you doing? And again, Glenn was such a messer that he'd do these things messing. So I was like, I just looked at my brother-in-law. I was like, is he messing or what? And then he fell to his side and onto the floor. And we were like, oh my God, what's going on? I was like, what's happening? And his eyes were rolling to the back of his head, and he had foam coming out of his mouth. I thought he was dying. Like, I actually thought he was dying there in front of me.
Jeez, God love
it. Oh God, like, even thinking about it now,
shock of that.
Oh my God, it was crazy. Like, I actually thought I was like weighing. I was like, he's dying. I was like, what's going on? And then my brother-in-law started panicking as well, because I've never seen anything like this before. I didn't know what was going on, so I just ran to my phone and rang 911, and they were like, 911 or whatever. I rang emergency services, and they were like, and I was just like, oh my God. I was like, you have to come quick. I was like, he's dying. I was like, you need to come. I was like, he has cancer. Like, I just blurted out. And they were like, calm down. What's going on? What's happening? And I just kept looking in. I went into the bedroom to ring, and I just kept looking in, and I could see my brother-in-law kissing him. He just kept kissing him on the face. He was like, Glenn, come back to us. And oh my God, it was actually the scariest thing I've ever seen. And they basically said that was a seizure. So that's obviously what it was. But I've never seen a seizure before. I've never seen that happening before. So I thought he was having a heart attack or something in front of me. I didn't know what it was. And that went on for about 5 or 6 minutes, which doesn't seem long. But when there's someone you love rolling on the floor, eyes to the back of their head, foaming out of mouth in the floor in front of you, and you don't know what to do, like, it felt like it went on for about an hour. And then I remember they were sending an ambulance up to us then, and the lady on the phone was like, don't leave me on the phone, they were like, don't hang up until the ambulance gets there. So I just had her on the phone, and then I was going over and trying to, we were putting Glenn on his side kind of to try to keep him. And I was obviously roaring crying. My brother-in-law was roaring crying. My nieces, actually, when this all happened, one of my nieces was, I think, 13 at the time. And my other niece was 10. They just brought all the kids, because we had young kids there, Krills and Cody, like, they were only so young. They brought them up to the playground. So God love them. They knew that something really bad was happening, but they were bringing the kids, taking the kids out of the situation. And yeah, he was just seizuring on the ground, and we were trying to help him, and I was roaring crying, and I was like, Glenn, come on, you're fine. I was like, come on back to us, come on. And then out of nowhere, he just pushed me, and he was like, what? Like, it's like he was out there coming back from it, and he kind of just, like, he just looked really scared. He was like, what's out there happening? And the lady on the phone was like, do not tell him what's out there happening to him. Don't worry him. Like, and I was like, none. I was like, none, you're fine. I was like, you just fell. I was like, just calm down. And he was just real out of breath and real confused, and he didn't know what was going on. And then after a while, he was like, no, Kirsty, I feel weird. Will you just tell me what happened? And I goes, I think you had a bit of a seizure. And he was like, I can remember myself going into that. So the ambulance ended up getting there then 40 minutes later, I think. And they normally have to bring you to the closest hospital, which would have been Wexford General, I think it's called. But I think they had a fire at that stage, so they were actually closed. And I just begged them, I was like, please just bring us to James's hospital. I was like, they have Glenn's file. They all know Glenn in there. I was like, please just bring us up there. I don't have the head to be going in and explaining everything to everyone. I was like, I just want people that know him to see what's going on. Like, so we left Cruise there with my sister. God love her. She got back in the middle of it all as well. She just abandoned her shopping in the middle of the shopping centre and ran. And I went with Glenn in the ambulance and they were bringing us up. And again, he was just Glenn again. I was just roaring, crying. I didn't know what was going on. I was Googling all sorts, sitting there on my phone. And he was just turning around to me. He's like, did I scare you, Kirst? And I was like, Glenn, not today. I was like, no. I was like, that's the scariest thing that's ever happened to me. And he's like, that's mad, isn't it? That just happened. That's mad. And I was like, yeah, mad.
Yeah. Scary thing to watch.
Oh my God. Do you know what? It's just, I didn't know what it was. I genuinely thought he was going to die in front of me. Yeah.
That happened to my sister.
Yeah.
And I remember that. The ambulance crew arrived, but me and my dad were like, is she dying?
Yeah.
We were saying to each other, she's dying. She's dying. Like, it's the weirdest thing.
Like, I was looking in at my brother-in-law saying, Glenn, come back to me. Come back to me. Do you know? Like, he was shouting at him, Glenn, stop. Don't leave us. Don't leave us. Come back to me. And that's a place that we have such happy memories in. Like, we loved that place so much. I haven't been back since. I can't go back.
Yeah.
And Cruz loved it as well. He'd love to go down. But I can't step back into that mobile after seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
trauma.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like, that day was probably, like, it was up there at one of the worst days of my whole life.
So you get to the hospital anyway, and then what?
We get to the hospital and they bring us into A&E, which is crazy for someone that has cancer. Yeah. And they bring us into a room of people that probably fell and hurt their arm or something, you know. Yeah. Straight into A&E they brought us. And I remember in the ambulance, I was texting Glenn's brother. I was like, Jason, this that they're spreading to his brain. I was like, I'm at him in Googling. I was like, this is exactly what's happening. And he was like, no, Kirsty. He was like, no, not at all. He was like, don't be saying that. Maybe it's just all the driving he's doing. Maybe just put a bit of pressure on him, or maybe he's just been doing too much while he was out of the hospital. And even Glenn was like to me, Chris, what do you reckon that was? And I was like, even then I was saying to him, I was like, you're after been doing a lot. You're after seeing all your friends. You're after been out. You went to a football match the other day. I was like, you could just be putting a bit of pressure on yourself, like just trying to not think the worst. But I was there texting his brother then. I was like, this sat there spreading to his brain. Like, I know it's sat there spreading to his brain. And they were like, we went in and sat in A&E. And the ambulance guys went into the triage just to explain what's after happening or whatever. And Glenn just looked at me and he's like, Kirsty, I can feel one of these coming on again. He's like, I feel weird again. He's like, get them. And I ran over to the triage and knocked on the door and they were like, get him to come over. So they get him to walk over to him. And I tried to go in behind him, but they shut the door. They wouldn't let me in with him. And I just heard, like, up against the door, like as if someone's at their phone against the door. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
Then I had to go back and sit in A&E, not knowing if he's out there having another siege. Oh my God, it was terrible. It was so horrible.
Could have let you in.
I know. Yeah. I know.
That's crazy.
So I think I sat there for about half an hour or something, not knowing what's going on.
Poor thing.
Oh my God, it was horrible. I was ringing everyone, roaring, crying. And then again, not knowing if the seizure, another seizure happened or if it didn't, because all I heard was a bang, you know?
Jesus.
And then the ambulance guys came out and they were like to me, yeah, so we did have another seizure. And again, it did last about 5 or 6 minutes again. But they were like, but he's fine now. He's fine. He's out of it, whatever. We have him in there on a bed. And I was like, can I go into him? I was like, what's going on? And yeah, then Glenn, they were like, just wait until they get my room. And then I get a phone call from Glenn. Like, all right, Kirst. I'm like, oh my God. I was like, you need to stop me. Like, I loved it. I loved how he just tried to make light out of all the situations, but I'm sitting there roaring, crying. He's like, all right, Kirst, what's up? He's like, how are you feeling? I was like, how am I feeling? But I remember they let me into him then, and he was like, yeah, all right. Like, he just kept checking on me. He was like, how are you? And he was like, are you all right? And I was like, yeah. I tried my best not to cry in front of him, because he did get really scared when people cried. Like, he used to always turn to us when he cried and be like, do you think I'm going to die? Do you think I'm going to die? Is that why you're crying? Mm. And we used to be like, Jesus, no, absolutely not. No, we just don't like what's happening to you. But yeah, in that room, then he just kept saying, "Are you all right? Are you all right? Are you all right?" You're like, and I was like, "Are you all right?" I was like, and he was like, "I'll be grand, Chris." He was like, "It's just another bump in the road. I'll be fine." But this stay in the hospital now, this did knock him. He was like, all the other times he was so positive, but this time, like, I think it's because he knew that he was in there now for another while. And he was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe I'm back in here. They're going to keep me in here for a while." But yeah, he was just like, "Why is this happening to me? This is like," after being so positive this week, then he was just like, "Why is this happening to me? Why me?" He turned to me. He's like, "Kirsty, I just love life. I love life. I love my life. I love everyone in it. Why is this happening to me?" He was like, "Why can't I just get a break?" He was like, "I feel like every time I get out and something positive happens to me, a few days later, something terrible happens again." It was just so up and down. Like, there was never a chance where we could actually get good news and enjoy the good news. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah, so again, he was just in hospital then for the next few days, and he had visitors all the time. He wouldn't let me leave his side this week. This week, he would not let me leave his side. And I didn't want to leave his side either. Like, all the other times that I stayed in the hospital with him, I had like a bed. Like, it was actually a sofa that, like, reclined that I was sleeping on. But this time he was like, "No, in the bed with me." Like, me and him, like, on a little single hospital bed the whole time. But I loved it. Mm. Honestly, I loved it. He was just so clingy this week. I'd leave for an hour. I remember I had to go and collect crews one of the days. And he texts me, he's like, "Chris, I missed you already. When you come back in?" He was like, "Come on back into me." He just wanted me there constantly.
God love him.
Oh, it was so sad. That last week in the hospital, just seeing him so down on himself wasn't nice at all.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
So did they do tests and
they just done tests all the time, and they came into us and they were like, I just remember the doctor's face when she came in. She just looked, and I was like, yeah. She was like, "So it did spread to the brain." She was like, "And we're gonna do radiation." But again, so this was a Saturday when they told us that it spread to the brain, and they scheduled the radiation for Monday week. So 8 or 9 days later, they wanted to do radiation. Now, I don't know if it was because it was chemotherapy and or whatever, but I just thought that was a bit of a stretch that they were doing that. I just thought they could work a bit faster. I'm like, come on now, like.
And was he getting seizures the whole time?
No, he didn't. He got them.
Give him medication.
Yeah, he got them two seizures, and then he had, I think he was on anti-seizure medication.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah.
And no, he didn't get any more, thank God. But yeah, that week in hospital was just horrible. And then they ended up coming around to us. He actually ended up making friends with one of the doctors. Like, he used to fist pump them and all when they got good news. Like, he was so lovely. And I remember him coming around and he said, "Listen, Glenn, we're not happy with this going to the brain. It shouldn't have went to your brain. We're not happy with it. But we're so happy with how you're reacting to the chemotherapy." Like, I think the spots in his lung were like 3.2 the size of them, and they were gone down just after two chemotherapies, and he was meant to do 6. So imagine if he had got 6, it would have completely went. So it's just this brain now. They were like, "We're not happy that it went to the brain. We're still not happy about this. We didn't want this to happen, but we're so happy with how you're reacting to the chemo that we're going to let you home." So he was allowed home again. They taught me a few things. Now, they were telling me how to check his reflexes and all, so that if anything happens again, I could check his reflexes to see if everything's working properly. They showed me how to use, there's like a jab that they give you if you seizure again. They showed me how to use that, so if he seizured again, that he was going to get that. And yeah, they sent him on his way again. They let him out, and they were going to let him to do his chemo as an outpatient. And then we went home, and again, he was happy out that he was at home, back with us, back with Cruz, back with everyone. Everyone was, and he actually took our advice that time, where he just laid low. He was just chilling out in my house. He'd have, if he was having visitors, they'd all come over to my house, his family. We actually got home that day and his whole family was in my house with my whole family, and we walked in, they're all like cheering. It was so lovely. But yeah, we got home that day. And he we just chilled out them a few days. Like we didn't do much at all.
They prepped you in case he had a seizure. Did he have any seizures after that when he got home?
No, he didn't. No. He was good. He was good at home. He was in great spirits again.
Did he begin the radiation?
No. So he was to, they let us out 5 days after that stay. And he got out on a Thursday and he was to begin the radiation on the Monday. But again, they were doing that as an outpatient. So he was happy out that he didn't have to go and stay in the hospital again. Mm-hmm. And we were just, he got his mask, is that what you call it?
Yeah.
He got his radiation mask and all fitted.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had it all prepped and ready to go. And he, them next few days then, we didn't do much. And he'd say the odd time, he'd like, Chris, I feel a bit disorientated or something, he just kept saying. And I was reading the back of his medication and it was saying that it can cause confusion or disorientation, or it can cause this. And I was like, it could be your medication. He was on so much medication. And I was like, but do you want to just go into the hospital and check? And he was like, no. He was like, no, I don't want to go back in. They'll keep me in. He was like, no, I don't want to. Absolutely not. And I was like, right. And once he seen on the boxes that his steroids and his medication could cause this, that he was just like, right, fair enough, I'll take it as that. And then I remember it was a Saturday. It was my mum's birthday. And Glenn was in my house. They were just chilling out. He was actually out. He was great them last few days. Like he was out playing on the road with crews that day, out in the air. And then his friend came over. There was horse racing on. And his friend came over to watch the horse racing with him. And I was like, my mum was there as well. So she would help us with crews as well. And she was like, I was like, I'm just going to pop to the square, to the shopping centre, so I can get my mum a cake and a present. I hadn't had time to go out and get her anything, like. And she's so good. Like, she's honestly been an angel for us. So I wanted to mark her birthday in some way. And I went out and I got her cake and a fresh cake. And Glenn's favourite cakes were coffee cakes. So I got him and his friend a coffee cake as well. I just remember seeing them saying, I'll pick them up from. And I went home and he was sitting on the couch with his friend watching the horse racing. He, like, I actually can't stress to you how fine he was. Like,
yeah,
he was fine, honestly. I walked in, I actually remember him. I walked in and he seen the cakes, like he just seen a bag of cakes in my hand. He goes, "Ah, me darling, what are you after getting for me?" And I went over and I gave him his cake. They were his favourite cakes in the whole world. And I gave one to him, one to his friend. And I went into them about half an hour later. And his friend was like, he's after eating my cake as well. So yeah, his cake and he ate his friend's cake. And then we done my mum's cake. And he had a slice of that then, of course, as well. And then his sister and her partner were meant to come over to see him. And I remember him just saying, oh, Kirsty, I have a really, really, really bad headache. And I was like, are you all right? Like, he was actually saying this from that morning. And I just kept saying, take your medication. You haven't taken your first medication yet. And he took his medication. And then he, after being with his friend for a while, after watching the race and after eating all his cakes, he was like, Kirsty, this headache's coming back to me now. Like, he kind of went back to himself. He was out playing on the road with crews that day. And then after all that, he was like, this headache's starting again. And I was like, Glenn, do you want to go into the hospital? He was like, why do you keep wanting me to? He's like, do you want me to go back in there? I was like, no, I don't. I was like, I'm just so scared of something happening. I was like, do you want to go back into the hospital? And he was like, no. And I was like, right, okay. And I was like, maybe go up and sleep it off. I was like, do you want me to go up with you and sleep it off? And he was like, yeah, we'll do that then. So we went upstairs and I rang his sister and I was like, listen, he's going to sleep. I'll ring you when he's awake and you can come over. And she was like, yeah, no problem at all. And we went up and he just went to fall asleep. And he was like, you go sleep with me, will you? And I was like, right. And I just got in and I cuddled him in the bed. And I just remember him saying, I feel better already. But he didn't end up going to sleep. He couldn't. His head, he just kept saying his head was too sore. And I was like, can we just call an ambulance? I was like, please, Glenn, can we just get you back in? And he was like, right, fair enough. And he wouldn't say that unless it was really bad, you know. His friend ended up coming because his friend Jamie used to drop him in like fresh salmon, and he cooked a salmon and all, God love him for him, and brought it around for him that day. And he came into us. My mum let him upstairs to us and he came up and I was like, oh, he's just not feeling well. And Glenn was sitting up in the bed, but he wasn't there. Like he was answering us and all, but he just wasn't really all there, you know. And the ambulance was going to take an hour or something to come to us. And Jamie's girlfriend, Roisin, she was a paramedic, so he called her around. So she came around with her kit and she was checking all his stuff. And they all seemed fine at the time. But again, he was just kind of, he just wasn't there. He was just kind of in and out. And he ended up getting sick and it was just black. Like his sick was just all black, which I thought was from all the cake he was after eating. He had a big chocolate cake and all. But knowing now, I know that that's when your organs are failing, I think, that you'd get sick and it would be black. Like that means your organs are failing. But the ambulance got there anyways and they came up and they were checking all his whatever tests they needed to do, they were checking. But I just remember one of the ambulance men looking at Roisin, that was checking him as well. He looked at her and he was just like, I can't get, like he couldn't get a vein. So he was severely dehydrated, Glenn was as well. And I just remember the look on his face. He just looked so worried, the ambulance man did. So, ambulance man, do you hear me? I'm sorry.
I didn't even bat an eyelid. I'm like, yeah.
But we went anyways, they put him into the ambulance and Glenn kind of just turned around and went to sleep and he'd never do that. He'd always say, Kirsten, I'm going to go for a little nap or something. Like he'd never just turn around and not say anything and go to sleep. And I was like, Glenn, are you going to sleep? Or like, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? And the ambulance, the guy in the ambulance then just kept, it's like he was trying to distract me. He was like, I'm a football team, does he play for? And oh, I know people up there and do you know this fella? And do you know that fella? Like, which fair enough, fair play to him, trying to take my mind off it. We got up there and this time we didn't go into A&E, they brought us straight through the back, which I was a bit like, right, okay, this might be a bit serious. Then they brought us into a room and I remember a doctor coming in and she was like, hey Glenn, how are you? And he was still up, but again he wasn't all there. And he was like, but I didn't notice at this stage, I didn't know what was going on. And she was like, how are you, do you know where you are? And I was like, why is she asking him stupid questions? So I was like, of course he knows where he is. And he was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And she's like, where are you? And he was like, don't know. And I was like, what? And then she goes, and do you know what month is? And he was like, yeah, yeah. He was being funny. He was like, yeah, I know that one. I know that one. Don't know. And I didn't know what was going on. I was like, why aren't you answering your questions, Glenn? I was like, what's going on? And she was kind of just taking notes. She wasn't really speaking to me. And she was like, do you know what day it is? Do you know what day of the week it is? And he was like, no. Nope. And then she walked out. Anyway, she was just taking her notes and she walked out. And I walked over to him. I was like, Glenn, what are you doing? I was like, it's what month is it? I was like, it's your birthday month. Your birthday's in 2 weeks. What month is it? And he was just kind of like, he was looking at me, but he was then looking around the room like he just wasn't there. And I was like, do you know who I am? And he was like, no. And my heart actually just broke into a million pieces when he didn't know who I was at that stage. So I didn't, like, I was like what is going on? And then they brought us into another room and I just, like, again, he just was turning around going to sleep, like he couldn't have a normal conversation with me. And I remember then he turned back around and my face was probably black and blue. I just could not stop crying in that room. I just knew something really bad was happening. And he turned around to me. And again, if he seen me cry, he'd panic. And he'd be like, what do you think something's happening? Like, what do you think's wrong? But he turned around, he looked at me and he just goes, you all right? And I was like, yeah, I'm Grant. Are you? And he was like, yeah, I'm Grant. And he turned around and just got back to sleep. And then he woke up again at another stage. And I was like, Glenn, do you know who I am? And he looked at me and he goes, Kirsty, why you asked me that for? Like he was just in and out. He was just totally in and out. And then he turned around and go to sleep again. But that was kind of the last normal conversation that I would have had with him. I just kept telling him I love you. He was saying he was like, I love you too. He was just holding my hand, going to sleep. And then they were bringing him for a scan. They wanted to scan him. I think they were scanning his brain again. And they were like, you can go with him if you want. And I was like, yeah, yeah, I'll go with him. And they let me walk up to the room with them, full of chat with me the whole way, the nurses and the doctors were. And then obviously I couldn't go in the actual room with them, so I just waited outside, and they were in there for so long. Like, I've been to so many of them scans with him, and they're only in there for 10 minutes maybe all the time. They're in there for a good, probably a good hour that I was sitting outside waiting. And then when they came back out with him, they did not look at me in the eye. They would not look at me. And I was like, do you know what's going on? I was like, what's happening? And they were like, oh no, we just need to speak with other doctors first. And then they turned away from me, like they would not look me in the eye. So I knew something was wrong. And I was texting my mom, I was texting his brother. I was like, something's going on. I was like, they're being so weird. They brought us back to the room then. And it was like a see-through room. It was like a glass room. And I could see them all chatting. There was about 10 of them all chatting together. And then I'd see the odd one looking at me, and I'd just be looking like, they haven't told me what's going on yet. And then I remember the doctor came into me then, and I was like, don't say it in front of him. I was like, do you need to talk to me? And he was like, yeah. So I walked out, and he was like, he's after having a bleed on his brain. And they were like, but it's really bad. They were like we scanned him last week. And I'll actually show you. I have a picture here. So they scanned him the week that he had the seizure. And that was his brain. That's the week that he had the seizure.
Okay.
And then if you go across, then that was his brain when they just scanned him there.
Christy.
Yeah. They said it was a big, huge bleed, and they were saying it was like leaking into all the cancer that was in it as well. But
Jesus Christ. I know. That is terrifying.
I know. I remember just looking at that and being like, oh my God. But still, none the wiser. I was like, he'll be fine. Like, I still did not think this was going to, he was going to die. Like, I still did not know what was going to happen. And I was like, so what he's going to do? I was like, he's just going to do radiation. I was like, what he's going to do? And he was kind of looking at me like, no, Kirstie, we're not going to do radiation. He was like, we're going to ring Beaumont and see if there's anything that they can do. I think they specialise in surgeries or the brain.
Neurology, yeah, the brain.
And they were like, but I don't know if they will because it's quite bad. And I remember saying to him, I was like, no, they have to. I was like, you need to. And I was like, is that the only thing that you can do? And he's like, yeah, like bone out mounts are our only option. And I was like, tell them they need to do this. I was like, they need to do something. And I remember saying, I was like, can I speak to someone on the phone? I was like, can I speak to someone in Beaumont? I was like, he's just another patient to them. I was like, that's my partner. That's my life partner in there. I was like, you need to do something. I was like, you need to help him. And he was kind of looking at me, he's like, Kirstie, he's not just another patient, which I know was probably a stupid thing to say, but I just meant that's my world in there. And this is just another operation to someone in Beaumont. I was like, you need to tell them to do something. I was like, you need to tell them to help us. And they were like, we'll ring them and we'll see what they can do. So then that was another few hours wait then. And I remember he came and he said, Beaumont said, there's nothing they can do. They can't do anything for him. And then still at this time, I still didn't think he was going to die. Like I knew that this was really bad, but I still did not think of that. So he was like, do you have anyone else to come into you? So I got my mom to come into me. And we had a meeting then with that doctor, and the doctor was like, my mom sat down and she just got straight to the point. My mom sat down and she goes, right, so how long does he have? And I looked at her, I was like, why are you asking that question? I was like, how long does he have? I was like, it's not that serious, is it? And I looked at the doctor and the doctor just said, couple of hours, few short days. And I was just like, what? I was like, are you telling me he's going to die? And he was just kind of looking at me. He was like, and I was like, no, ring Beaumont back. I was like, try get them to do something. I was like, we need to do everything. I was like, you can't. And he was like, Kirstie, they can't do anything. He was like, if they would, they could. He was like, taking in his age, if they could do anything for him, they would do it. And I was like, and if they did do something for him, I was like, would he be okay? Like, what would happen to him? And he's like, I don't really want to answer that question. I think he was basically saying that they couldn't do anything for him, and even if they did, it still wouldn't help him. Like,
the damage was too great.
The damage was done. Yeah. So then they moved us up into another room then, where basically they were just keeping them, they were just giving him everything they could. And I remember saying to the nurse, is he going to come out of this? Like, is he going to come around and talk to us before or anything? And she was like, I don't know. She was like, that's what we're trying to get him to come back and be responsive. She was like, but I don't know. And I was like, okay. And then at this stage, everyone was coming in. His whole family was in. My whole family was in. I couldn't even tell you who exactly was there that day. It's all such a blur. And this was going into the early hours of the morning then. And then you have to make a decision. I was like, do I let Cruz come in? And I was like, and then I just thought to myself, no, Cruz's last memories, they were playing on the road a couple of hours ago. I was like, I can't let him come in to see him attached to a load of machines. And yeah, no, we all just spent our time just sitting around him. I just lay in his chest the whole time. I was just lying on him the whole time. And I remember coming in then and she was like, Kirsty, she was like, he's not reacting to this. He was like, he's not reacting to this medication. He's not going to come around. We're just keeping him comfortable at this stage. And hearing them words, like, we're just keeping him comfortable until he dies. Like, it's just crazy. So I don't even think it registered at that stage. I was just sitting with him. It's about 50 people in the room. And I'm not even exaggerating when I say that. There was so many people in the room. I was lying on his chest. I was playing all his songs. Sorry. We always said that when we got married, that All Night Long, we loved that song. That is one of our songs that we used to always sing. We always said that that would be one of our songs when we got married. So I was playing them songs to him, singing to him. And then he loved David Gray as well. So I played a few David Gray songs to him. I was singing to him. I was talking to him. I just kept saying, come on, Glenn. I was like, fucking give us a miracle. I was like, just come around. I was like, come on. I was like, you can do it. I was like, just come back, please. Like, and then I think I went to the toilet or something. Like, I haven't left this man's side for probably about 24 hours. And then I had to go to the bathroom. And while I was coming back from the bathroom, the nurse ran up to me. She was like, Chrissy, it's time. She was like, it's time. So I ran back into him and he was still there. He was still there. And he was just fighting so hard, and I knew that he just didn't want to go. He didn't. So I was just saying to him, Glenn, just go. I was like, it's okay. I was like, you can go. I was like, Cruz will be fine. I was like, I'll look after him. I was like, you're doing enough now. It's fine. Just go. I was like, you're out there fighting so hard. It's okay. And I was laying on his chest and his breathing was getting heavier and there was more time between all his breaths. And I remember I was just lying on his chest and I had one hand on my heart so I could still, on his heart so I could still feel it beating. And I had my other finger like sitting under his nose so that I could still catch his breath and see when he stopped, like. And his breathing was just getting heavier and heavier and heavier. And then his breath stopped out of his nose. I couldn't feel any more breaths coming out of his nose. So I was like, right, this is it. And his heart was still going though. Like, his heart just kept beating. And I was like, right, it's probably going to stop this time soon. It went on for 15 minutes after he stopped his breath. That's how long he tried to hold on. Like, even when he stopped breathing, like, his heart just kept going. Like, that's how much he fought to stay with us. Like, he fought so hard right up to the very end, honestly.
Yeah.
And I just remember screaming. I just remember saying he's gone once his heart stopped. I feel like mine actually stopped for a few after as well. I just remember shouting out to everyone, he's gone, he's gone. Because everyone was relying on me to tell him when everything stopped. Like, I just remember screaming, he's gone. And that was it.
It it's an awful moment to, you know, to be present with something like that. Yeah. It's unbelievable. You can't believe you're sitting there. And yeah. then they're gone and you're not, nothing would ever prepare you for
no,
that.
No, never, ever. No. And there were so many people there. Again, I couldn't tell you who, but there was about 50 people there in that room. And he went, which he would have wanted. He would have wanted to make a scene.
Yeah.
But no, we said one for about 2 or 3 hours then after.
That's crazy though, because, you know, he had the illness and I know he had been told it was so serious.
Yeah.
But then the way it happened was so
I just never believed it. I don't know why. I just never believed it. And he was just so well for the whole time he was sick. He was so well. That
so full of life.
So full of life the whole time. And making jokes all the time and asking other people if they were okay. Like people were crying over him and him saying, "Ah, you're all right." He was like, "I'll be grand. Like, I'll be fine." Yeah, it was just...
So lonely for you to now have... Your whole world, who was always, "I'll be fine, I'll be fine, I'll be yeah. grand." And then
just gone, yeah. Walking out of that hospital that day and leaving him was, oh my God, I felt like I was in a daze. Like, I imagine just leaving him in a room knowing that I'm never going to see him again. I couldn't leave the room. They nearly had to drag me out of that room. I just couldn't leave him. Imagine leaving the room knowing... I'm actually never going to see his face again, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember I just went home with my mum and dad. I think everyone was still in the hospital and walking through the corridors, people going in to see all their loved ones. Me going down to a car after losing everything. Driving home that day, just remember looking out the window, it's crazy, and seeing people going for their coffee, seeing people out for their walks. And my whole world has just had to shatter and and no one knows yet. It's crazy, yeah. I just went home and went up to bed and went to sleep for a few hours. And loads of people were in my house. Like, there was so many people. As soon as I got home, there was so many people there. Like, my whole family. I just remember going upstairs and going to sleep. And then waking up and then saying, "Oh, fuck, that actually happened. Like, that actually happened." And then that was the start of it all.
It's like a ton of bricks.
Yeah, yeah.
When you wake up.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. And then you wake up and it's like you're...
I think that was the worst thing, waking up from your sleep every day after that. And then saying, "Oh, shit, like this is real life. Like that actually happened. Like he's actually not here anymore. I don't have to go into the hospital today and see him, you know." I would have lived in the hospital for the rest of my life if I knew that...
You'd have been together.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the way it happened to him, as I said, Glenn was so scared. Anytime he thought that something bad was happening, he was so scared. So the way it happened, he just went to sleep. And like if someone had came into him and said, "Listen, Glenn, there's nothing more we can do for you. You have a week left." He would have been terrified. And he would have he would have been terrified. So the way that it happened, that he just went to sleep, and that before he went to sleep, he didn't know what was going on. He was a bit out of it. Like, he didn't know what was going on, was the best way that it could have happened. So I'm
mm-hmm. You're thankful he was saved from that.
Yeah, yeah.
Fear.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. He just went to sleep.
Yeah, yeah. I know. And so, you know, what's life like for you now? You're so young. You had your whole life ahead of you.
Yeah.
You had all these plans. You didn't even get the chance to get married.
No.
Which you would have done.
Yeah, of course. We actually talked about it in the hospital, I remember. I would have married him 6 months after I met him. I was obsessed with Glenn. Honestly, I was obsessed with him from the moment I met him. Anyone that ever knew me as me and Glenn, you know, like, he was just everything. And I remember when we were in the hospital, he was like... I used to always say, "Glenn, why don't we get married? Come on now. Like, we're nearly together 10 years now and you still haven't even gave me a ring." And he used to be like, "Ah, it's coming, it's coming." He used to say, "I'm too young." I'm like, "Ah, go away." But when we were in the hospital then, I remember it was the last time he was in there. And I go, and he was like, will we just fuck off and get married after, like when I get out, like just go to a registry office and do it. Like, what are we waiting for? Oh, I would have done it in a heartbeat. And obviously I was like, yeah, let's do it. But the night that he passed away, his brother texted me and he's like, oh, can I come over to you later? And I was like, yeah, of course. So I remember I woke up in my sleep and I went downstairs and his brother and my mom were sitting down there. And they and they were like, we have to give you something. They were like, Glenn got you a ring. He was like, he was going to propose to you when he got out of hospital. We had a ring. They were like, we were hiding it from. He picked it out while he was sitting in hospital. He picked it out on FaceTime. My mom went in to collect it. He picked it out.
Oh God.
Yeah. So he had a ring. He had all intentions. And that's it there.
Oh my God.
It's yeah. It's beautiful. But yeah, so he was going to do.
God, you're so robbed.
Yeah, absolutely robbed. And that's how much we didn't think he was going to go. Yeah. Like if he knew he was going to go, he would have gave it to me sitting in his hospital bed. He was just like, no, I want to wait until I'm a bit better.
He obviously wanted to do it in the
He wanted to do it properly, yeah. He didn't want his sickness to push him to have to do it in a hospital room, like, yeah. Which I would have, he could have done it sitting on the toilet to me. Yeah, I and I would have been happy, you know?
I know.
But, oh my God, them few days then after. It was all the days, to be honest. Literally the day after he passed away, me, his dad and his brother was in a funeral home picking out his coffin. Like, it's literally you walk into a room and there's coffins everywhere. It's like a little shop. And you just go and pick what coffin he gets buried in.
I know.
How are you meant to do that? Like, it's crazy. And then his funeral then was 4 days later. He got laid out in my house and my road was jam-packed for, I'd say there was a good 100 people on my road every single day. I think it was 2 or 3 days that we had him. And he was in my sitting room and I slept in with him every night. It's weird because I felt like he was still there. Like we was going to sleep and I remember I was freezing. I was getting a blanket and I was like, he must be cold. I went and got a blanket. I put it on him. Picking out what to wear, what he has to wear in his coffin. I was like, do you think I'm going up to his wardrobe now? Absolutely not. It was a military funeral, so we had the choice now, but I just said that they could put him in his, I think it's called his number one. So it was like a navy suit. And he hated that suit. He hated that suit. But I was like, I'm so sorry, Glenn. I'm not going up and looking in your wardrobe. You're going to have to wear your suit. But he looked so handsome. Mm. He looked so handsome in it. And yeah, I slept with him for them 2 days. And then the morning of the funeral came around. And I remember I was doing my hair in the sitting room with him. I didn't let Crow see him for them few days either. I didn't, he was too young. He would have tried to wake him up or something. And that would have been even more heartbreaking, you know?
Yeah.
So we had to try keep him out of room for them few days.
It's just so individual, isn't it?
Yeah. Like it really is. Like you literally have to make a split decision. Yeah. That's probably like, he'll probably resent me in the future for not letting him see him before. But
he's so tiny.
It's what I thought was best for him. And even now I do think it was best that his last memories were playing on the road with him, you know? Mm-hmm. The day of his funeral, then I was in curling my hair, sitting in with him, and I remember my mum only got a new sofa, and I put the curler down on it, and it burnt the whole sofa right through. And she walked in, and I was like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry." And she was like, "You're lucky. I can't give out to you now." But he looked so beautiful though when he was laid out. He really did. He looked like he was just asleep, and he had gangs and gangs and gangs of people. Like there was buses of people from the army coming down, like there was like 3 double-decker buses coming to see him. Like he was just so loved. He was like, I've never came across anyone that disliked Glenn, like ever in my whole life. Like he was just so loved, so well respected. And then the funeral was like, you'd swear he was a celebrity. Like the funeral, there was gangs and gangs and gangs of people. So he got collected from my house and he went and done a little drive-by up by his parents' house where we grew up, like. And it took us, and his parents' house are about 5 minutes from my house. It took us about 40 minutes to go up to the church. That's how jam-packed the roads were for his funeral. It was a full military funeral, so he had people from the army holding his coffin going in, and like they were all his friends as well from the army. So I really appreciated them for doing that as well, because that was very hard for them to do, Jesus. And mm-hmm. they still had to be professional and do mm-hmm. their job as well, you know. Me and Glenn's brother said a eulogy. And then he got like, did you ever hear of a gun carriage?
Yeah.
He got a gun carriage down up to the graveyard. And again, like, I can't even explain to you the amount of people. Like, it was something else's funeral was. It was crazy. Yeah, then
back to
watching them lowered into the ground was just another thing that I think I blacked out for.
Yeah. Your whole world gone.
Yeah, like you have everything at one stage and then the next day everything's gone.
How do you deal with that being so young? You were what age when he passed?
When he passed, I was 27. I was just gone 27. And he was 26. He was 27 2 weeks after he passed.
Jesus.
Yeah.
You're a young mom.
Yeah.
Like, is it scary to think about the future?
Oh my God, it's so scary.
Yeah.
It's so scary. Even decisions, like, you know, big decisions that I have to make, I do be like, oh, what would Glenn have done here, you know? Crew's starting big school in September. It's just all the little things. Like, Glenn used to always say that he was like, Crew's going to be a footballer. I'm like, yeah, well, you can do the football trainings. I was like, you're doing it all. He didn't get to bring him to football. He didn't get to bring him out for his first pint. He's not going to be there when he's starting school. It's just mad. But yeah, like I'm so, even now, 2 years on, I'm so scared of the future. Like, I just don't know what it looks like for me, you know?
Mm. And Cruz, is he asking questions?
I actually didn't tell him that Glenn passed away until a week after, because he was so young. He was so young to Glenn being in the hospital. Like, he was so used to Glenn being in the hospital that he didn't really ask many questions about where his dad.
They wouldn't retain the information at that age. And yeah. They wouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were coming home from school one day and he was like, we can't see daddy. And then like it was just sprung on me in that moment. And I was just like, I think I just said to him, Dad's gone up to the angels. Me and Glenn used to always call Cruz our angel and all. I was like, Dad's gone up to heaven to be with the angels. And I started crying when I said it, because I was just so on the spot. And then he started crying, but I think he was only crying because I was crying, you know.
Yeah.
But now he asks a lot more questions. Yeah, he's a lot more like, why did I have a mom and dad and I don't? And why do I have to go up and see my dad in the graveyard? And why did my dad go up to heaven? I just tell him that I told him that his dad was sick and that he had to go up to heaven. And then he's like, well, why can't he come back down? And I just say, if he comes back down, he'll be sick again. But up in heaven, he's not sick up there. So yeah, he asks a lot more questions now, God love him. And he gets upset about it now as well. He's getting to the age where he knows that things look a bit different for him than it probably does to his friends, you know.
Mm. And it's so hard. Don't want to be different kids.
Yeah,
they
hate
being different.
Yeah.
Mm. I would imagine it's quite isolating to be so young.
Yeah.
And none of your friends are going through what you're going through. Do you find that?
Like, oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. And none of my friends even at the time really had kids or anything. So one, they couldn't relate to me and being a mom. And now they can't relate to me being a mom that's lost their partner, you know.
That's really isolating, isn't it?
It is. And my friends are so good. I have such a good support system. My friends and family, like, they're so amazing. And they've been what's got me through, you know. But at the same time, they still really don't understand, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Have you found anybody or connected with anyone online or anything?
No. Oh, yeah, I have actually. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few people that reach out to me saying, oh, this happened to me too. Or,
yeah.
And I do speak to them every now and then, which is nice. It's nice to have someone that understands as well.
Yeah, it is. As I said, you're so young.
Yeah, and that's why I've watched a few of the podcasts, your podcast, mm-hmm. obviously, with a few of the ladies. Now, a lot of them would have been a lot older than me, but it's still like some of the things that you're going through or some of the things you're thinking in your head. And then I'd be like, okay, I'm not crazy. Other people think like me, you know.
Mm. There's a lot of young moms out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually surprising when I'm doing this. Like, I get shocked at how many
Yeah.
Like messages I get.
Yeah.
They're just young. I'm like, oh my God, this is just wrong.
Yeah. It's just the wrong. Amount of young people even getting cancer lately is just, I know. It's just crazy. Like, it's just like, I'm hearing it every day.
Did you ever find out what the cancer was? No.
No.
They never did.
They never found out. The case is closed. His cause of death, I actually written down here because, so on his death certificate, it's stage 4 secondary cancer, unknown primary.
Oh, wow.
Metastasis, is that how they say it? Yeah. Metastasis of the brain. So it's the brain that did
spread to the brain and
got him in the end, yeah.
Scary.
Yeah.
The poor thing.
I know.
So full of life.
I know.
You know?
I know. He was amazing. He really was. And that's what I actually felt a lot of pressure coming on to this. Just I'm trying to get out how amazing he was and how much of a great person and how missed he is. Like I feel like I'm okay at the moment, but and I've had some happy times as well, but I just feel like there's always lingering sadness. Like I actually just feel like I'll never reach peak happiness again without a bit of sadness in the back of my mind, you know.
Mm.
Not a bit of sadness. Like anytime anything happens to me, I'm always so happy that this is that they're happening to me, but Glenn's not here to share it with me, you know, something like that. Like I moved out recently. Me and Cruz moved out of my mum's house. And me and Glenn were saving for a mortgage. So that's something that we would love him to do, but obviously we can't and I had to do it on my own.
That's a big thing.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I just feel I feel like I can be happy, but never peak. It'll never peak for me. And I hope it will one day. But at the moment, I just can't see it. I think it's still quite fresh. It's only been 2 years.
Yeah. But that's okay to always feel like, you know, you'll never have happiness in that way with him in that life again because he's not here. And
if a bit of sadness is what I have to. Mm.
You can be happy again, no doubt. But you won't be happy in the life, if this makes sense. Like I was talking about this last week, that like your mind completely changes and alters.
Yeah.
Because now you have to kind of almost build a new life without him in it.
I feel like I'm a completely different person.
It's like that life ended.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Like I feel like I'm a completely different person. But the person that I was had a family. The person that I was had a partner. Like I woke up with Glenn. I went to sleep with Glenn.
Mm.
He called me in work. He probably called me 20 times a day. I got off work, I'd ring Glenn, see where he is. Like my whole life was revolved around Glenn and Cruz, and now it's just me and Cruz, you know.
Lonely.
Yeah, it's so lonely. Like I could be in a room with 1,000 people and I just feel so on my own.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah.
I think you've done a really good job. I don't think you should feel like, you know.
Thank you.
The pressure, like, as in, I understand why you did, but like you've captured him so well. Like I could just picture him walking in that door and bursting in the door.
His big white smile.
Yeah. Like I can just, you've painted the picture of who he is.
Yeah.
Still, you know, that, you know, he'll forever live on through you and through
Chris. 100%. As long as I'm here, Glenn's going to be here. Yeah. I will be in my rocking chair with my grandchildren, Cruz's kids, and they will know about Glenn. Like, no, he Glenn, you can't forget about Glenn. No one can, you know?
Mm.
It's Glenn.
Look, thank you so much for coming in today and travelling down from Dublin and sharing everything with me.
No
and
problem. Thank you for having me.
People, you know, there's a lot of people that need to hear, they need to see themselves and someone else, because no doubt there is other people out there that are so young. And
do you know what it is? I just think if anyone feels like, you know your body, if you think something's wrong, go and get it checked out. I feel like girls would do it, but I feel like men have this thing where, like I remember my brother saying, if that was me, I just would have never went to the hospital.
Yeah.
And they said if Glenn waited any longer to go in, he would have had a heart attack, because what was growing in him was attached to his heart, and it would have just gave him a heart attack. So we wouldn't have got the time that we did have with him. We wouldn't have got that extra time with him.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I just feel like if you ever think that something was wrong, go and get it checked. Like, what's the harm, you know?
Even if
it ends up being something stupid, at least you checked. At least you're healthy. At least you can still be here for your family, you know?
Yeah, you're dead right. You're dead right. Good message. Thank you, Kirsty.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.